Good morning. My name is Joe. My pronouns are he and him, and children's literature is a big part of my life, for better and for worse. Before this was a children's book, The Bear Hunt was an American folk song, I'm assuming in Canada as well. One of my best memories of my grandpa was sitting on his knees when I was 3 or 4, and he would bounce his knees and grab my arms and make me do the swissy swassies through the grass and all that stuff, and then he would scare me half to death with his giant bear roar. You can't go over it, you can't go under it. Oh no, you gotta go through it. When you get past the bunnies and chocolate and religious imagery, that is the Easter story. You gotta go through it. Now, there's a lot of temptation to imagine that that's not the case. Easter is a joyful day for Christians around the globe, and it is a good news story for sure. We should celebrate. But sometimes we forget how we got here. We like to skip the messy bits and go straight to the party. You've been out in the retail spaces the past couple of months. Like the day after Boxing Day, the Valentine's candies go out, and then a day after that, the Easter bunnies and chocolate eggs before the end of January, some places. Spiritually, we sometimes follow that path as well. We go directly from Christmas to Easter without really bothering with Lent. 40-day journey through the wilderness of sacrifice and lament? Ugh, no thanks. Or this week, some of us last Sunday sang our hosannas, loud hosannas on Palm Sunday, and then we went about a normal week and show up again for more cheers here on Easter Sunday. Christ is risen. Indeed. But there was this whole dramatic story in between: betrayal, prosecution, crucifixion, darkness. Where was I for that part? Good Friday services are always less popular than Easter Sunday. I don't take attendance, no judgment in that statement, just describing that sometimes we skip. And theologically, it's tempting to do the same. Sometimes we use Jesus' pain and death to distance ourselves from our own vulnerability. Good Friday happened to him so that it won't happen to me. He suffered and died so that we don't have to. He bore my sin so that I don't have to take responsibility for it. His death and resurrection changed the formula, changed the game, so that we are saved from death and destruction. And that's true, all of it. Yes, and it's not the whole story. For Christians, Easter does mean that death is not the end of anything, that mercy and grace get the final word, that love wins. But still, you can't go over it, you can't go under it, you gotta go through it. All of it. When I was a kid, my evangelical culture was very invested in end times theology. The signs were all there. The news, I mean, everybody could see it, right? The end of history, that's right around the corner. Jesus is going to come back and rapture me and the rest of the true believers. None of that dying stuff for me. It was straight to heaven, do not pass go, do not collect $200. And I really believed that when I was a teenager. I literally thought that, well, I'm going to be saved from death. Mine was the last generation, and faithful Christians would rise to meet Jesus in the air, like tomorrow. I heard that over and over, and I believed that it was inevitable. Although, to be honest, I hoped that Jesus would wait a little while. There were certain delights of the flesh that I really wanted to experience before Jesus took us all up to heaven. Not all Christians share that belief system, but still, like, you get that. That's the dream, right? You live the good life, skip the painful parts, and go straight to the next place, the better place. Of course, that's oversimplified, and that is unrealistic. Life is full of sorrow, to varying degrees, but that is the inevitability. And I see now that for me, that end times worldview was a defense mechanism to cope against my mortality. And fair enough, mortality is scary. It's perfectly normal to use the story of Jesus as protection against the fear. But as we've been going through Lent, as we've read through the Gospel of Mark this year, we've seen that Mark offers a different way, and Mark offers a different way to understand Easter as well, the invitation to go through it. I know you're all familiar with the Easter story, and we've already heard the reading from the Gospel of Mark once today. But I'm going to read it again, because the tone is important. When the Sabbath was over, Mary of Magdala, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought perfumed oil so that they could anoint Jesus. Very early, just after sunrise on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb. They were saying to one another, "Who will roll back the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb?" When they looked, they found that the huge stone had been rolled back. On entering the tomb, they saw a young person sitting at the right, dressed in a white robe. They were very frightened, but the youth reassured them, "Do not be amazed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, the one who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. Now go and tell the disciples and Peter, Jesus is going ahead of you to Galilee, where you will see him just as he told you." They made their way out and fled from the tomb, bewildered and trembling. But they said nothing to anyone because they were so afraid. Bewildered and trembling, silence and fear, the traditional emotions of Easter. That's the main, Why is fear the tone that Mark sets for this Easter story? Why are these friends of Jesus so afraid at the news of his resurrection? I suppose there are lots of reasons. The shock of the empty tomb, on top of the trauma of the past few days. That's a big one, obviously. This is not what we were expecting. Ah, do not be overwhelmed. And then there is the surprise of the stranger, possibly a heavenly messenger, although Mark's gospel does not make that clear. And the towering implications of his message, Jesus is risen. If that's true, even though that's what they long to hear, if it's true, a miracle like that would shake their whole world. So those are all legitimate explanations for a reaction of fear and trembling. And there's one more piece hidden in the details that I didn't notice until one of my favorite Bible teachers, Alexander Shaya, pointed it out. Jesus is going ahead of you to Galilee, where you will see him just as he told you. It's a strange detail to include here. Why Galilee? Why not just meet them where they already are, in Jerusalem? That's what happens in most of the other Gospels. And why does this detail matter enough to include in the Scriptures? I don't expect anyone to recall a sermon series from 3 years ago, but we did spend a month going through Mark's Gospel with Alexander Shaya's book Heart and Mind as our guide. And Shaya calls the theme of this Gospel Sailing Mark's Stormy Seas. Over the first half of the book, Jesus leads his disciples back and forth across the Sea of Galilee, no less than four times, and each time they encounter a storm, which is likely literal. The Sea of Galilee was notorious for its quick and intense storms, and also literary. The sea was ancient symbolism for chaos, danger, and unpredictability. That is the main theme of Mark. Jesus calls these disciples, and they naively follow, only for him to send them into the storm again and again, where they respond with fear and doubt and confusion. "We thought you were the one here to rescue us. So why is this still so hard?" And then, in the second half of the gospel, Jesus leads them away from Galilee, finally, and straight into a different kind of storm in the capital city. The storm of politics and conflict and betrayal and crucifixion. So that's the context of Mark's Easter story. Yet again, the disciples find themselves adrift on the metaphorical sea, spinning in the turmoil, wondering if Jesus was gone for good this time, if he had left them. And then, when the women finally hear some good news, "The tomb is empty, he is risen, go tell the rest of the disciples, Jesus is going to meet you in Galilee." Oh no, back to Galilee, back into the storm, more uncertainty, more chaos, more vulnerability. Yeah, no wonder they went away in fear and in silence. Well, that seems like an odd place to end the story. Yay, Jesus is risen, now get back out there into the storm. Where's Easter? Where's the victory? Where's the joy, the grace? Where's the good news? Again, the context is significant. The Gospel of Mark was written for a community of Christ followers in Rome in mid to late first century. And this was a community in crisis. The Jewish Christians had been scapegoated by the Roman Emperor Nero. There was a massive fire that devastated the city. The Jewish part was the only part that was left standing. Rumors start spreading that, well, the Jews were the cause of this. Nero didn't want to be blamed for it himself, so he's like, okay, yeah, we're going to go blame the Jews. The Jews are like, it wasn't us, it was these Christians that are living here. And so the Christian Jews were scapegoated. They were hated. They were hunted. They were betrayed by their neighbors. They were forced to flee. They were publicly executed in the arena when they got caught. So Mark is writing to them, the remnant, the people who had fled, the people who were still hanging on and hiding. They were living in the storm, in spite of their faith, and in this case, because of their faith. And so Mark tells them stories of the storm over and over again. Jesus is with us in the storm. You will have what you need. This is not the end. And yet, you can't go over it, you can't go under it. You gotta go through it. Even on Easter, at the moment of the greatest victory, Jesus calls them back into Galilee, back into the chaos, because that's where the Roman church lived, even after the resurrection. That's where we find ourselves too sometimes. All of us, in some measure, from least to the greatest, we gotta go through it. And somehow, beyond all hope, when you go through it, you find God with you. Christ among us, as we've been talking about this Lent. Christ in the middle of it, that somehow changes nothing and yet it touches everything. That's Mark's Easter message. There is salvation, there is hope, there is courage and strength and healing and friendship and grace in the middle of the storm. Along with the chaos and uncertainty and vulnerability, you will have what you need. But you've got to go through it. Easter happens. Christ is among us, and still we are human. We got to go through it. Mark's gospel ends not with a conclusion, but rather an invitation. Okay, you are afraid. You are in the middle of it. What are you going to do with your fear? In ending this way, I see the writer of Mark offering two gifts to the people in the storm. For one, Mark is normalizing fear. Scared of the storm? Welcome to the club. That's been the way of Jesus' followers from the beginning. And not just the folks on the fringes. This is the fear of Peter, first of the apostles, the founding father of the church. The Christians in Rome knew Peter. He moved to Rome at the end of his life. He was one of those who got caught in the persecution. He was caught and tortured and killed by the emperor. This Peter, Peter the rock, your friend, this Peter was afraid, like you are afraid. This is the fear of Mary Magdalene, one of the few female disciples of Jesus to be named in the Gospels. There's some fascinating recent research demonstrating that Mary Magdalene was just as important as Peter, that she was the female counterpart to Peter's leadership. Magdalene is a title. In Aramaic, Magdala means tower. Mary the tower, standing alongside Peter the rock. This Mary, Mary the tower, she was afraid. Like you are afraid. Fear did not disqualify either of these from faith, from belonging, from leadership in Jesus' community. And eventually they found their courage and their voice. We know that from the rest of the story. But there was no shame in going through their fear first. There was no rush to get over it or to pretend that they weren't afraid. They were afraid, full stop. So if you are afraid of the storm, okay. Be afraid. Sit with it. Feel it. Let it be. I'm told by the psychology experts that we are physiologically wired to let our emotions run a full course. When we experience strong feelings, if that cycle, the wave gets interrupted, if our feelings don't have time and space and attention to complete the wave, that's when trauma solidifies. So our bodies, our minds know how to process our emotions, even the extreme ones of fear in the storm. But we need to breathe. We need to give ourselves time and space and attention to feel deeply and fully. That is the path to healing. I'm not a psychologist. There can be extenuating circumstances. It's not as simple as I'm making it out to be. But in the right context, with good supports and a healthy environment, that's the path to healing. We heal when we let our emotions be what they are for as long as they need to be. So Mark says to those in the storm, it's okay to be afraid. You will still be yourself. You will still be a gift to those around you. You will still belong in the community of God. Take your time. Storms are hard. We're not pushing to get to the end. You gotta go through it. The second gift here is that fear is not only okay, fear actually is a teacher. If you look back over Mark's gospel, Galilee, the place of the storms, that's where the big lessons happened. The disciples' fear served them. It got their attention. It primed them to learn. It moved them and changed them and deepened them and offered wisdom along the way. Again, not quickly, but patiently, with time and reflection, Jesus' followers learned a lot from their fear. My internet friend Rob Bell looks at those kind of repeated life events as a kind of curriculum. This thing that you keep coming back to, maybe it's a storm, maybe it's something less frightening. When an experience or a relationship or some pattern keeps happening, it can be helpful to ask, okay, what is this here for? What is this trying to teach me? Why does the curriculum of life keep giving me this particular pop quiz? There must be something that has got me stuck here. Or more positively, there's something that's captured my attention, that's captivating me, trying to get my attention. When you do the first bit, when you let yourself feel the fear or whatever emotions surround an experience, when you're not afraid of your feelings, then you can explore them. What is it about this storm that has me shaking? Is there a particular quality to the emotion in this one? Something that points to something deeper going on? What is my fear trying to teach me? I need to be careful here because some of us have been taught that God does this to us, that God brings storms into our life in order to test us or discipline us or teach us. That's not what I'm saying. If God does it to us, that makes God a bully, not a teacher. I'm saying that storms happen because that's life. And when they happen, they're going to happen anyway. Within the storm is an opportunity to learn. God meets us in it, though God does not cause it. It's the difference between a punishment and a choice. The gift of choosing to see fear, or whatever emotion, whatever experience, as a teacher, choosing to see it as part of the curriculum of life, is that it gives you some distance, it gives you some agency. As a learner, you step back a bit. You can examine the thing, you can look at it, roll it around, poke it a bit, ask it questions. You can do with your own story what we've been doing with this story from the Gospel of Mark. Why is this here? What is this saying to us? We may or may not figure it out. There may not be an answer every time, but the process is good. The process changes us. It lets us get a handle on what's going on. The fear is manageable. It's a little bit less urgent. I'm just learning here. Maybe this is even fun. Some of us are curious people. Learning can be fun when nobody is forcing you to go to school. So maybe there's a lesson for you in this particular storm. Or maybe not, but taking the position of an active learner for a while gives you that opportunity to hold the storm instead of simply being battered by it. I hope that's helpful. I know that some of you are in the middle of the storm, for real. And it probably doesn't feel like a gift. I'm not saying that you have to be pleased by it or accept it as a teacher or anything like that. Storms are hard, even on Easter. You don't have to like them. But you do have to go through it. And as we go through it, the ancient wisdom of Mark, of Jesus, is that we are not alone in the storm today. We are enough, in spite of, even through our vulnerability. We can let our fear, all of our emotions, be whatever they are for now. We are not alone. Christ is among us, and we have what we need. Trusting that takes faith. Can't prove any of this to anyone. Faith is required, but you have faith. It's an act of faith to simply show up in this place on this day. You've got what it takes. In a few minutes, we're going to celebrate the ritual of communion together. Today, the bread and the juice serve as a reminder of two things. These are resources, food for the journey. It's just a small piece of bread. It's just a sip of juice. It's not much, But somehow, believe it or not, it's enough. The promise of Easter is that we will have what we need in our fear, in the storm. And secondly, we're in this together. From Peter the Rock and Mary the Tower, to the faithful battered Church of Rome, across the centuries to the community of love in this room, to the community of love gathered across the fiber optic lines of the internet, we are in this bear hunt together. Can't go over it. We can't go under it. We gotta go through it. And this unites us with each other, with our ancestors, and with the Spirit of Christ. Amen.